that's the Bronx horns. Or if I were to say it in the vernacular, dem's the Bronx horns with Second Wind. It's from their acclaimed 1995 album, Catch the Feeling. Bobby Porcelli, Ray Vega, Mitch Froman, Mongo Santamaria. These people are, I mean, legends in the Bronx. So we salute the Bronx today. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrecht Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday, the gathering place for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. And today, in whatever way you choose, let's see if we can repeal and replace the propaganda that we have been subjected to all week. The number to call is 888-874-4888 to share your thoughts and ideas. It's an open forum, so there's no rule about what you should be talking about, but the idea is that whatever you're talking about, see if you can give us some pointers. I mean, be clear about what your position is and help us understand what brought you to that particular conclusion, and be prepared to answer a question or two. Okay, so we start from Baltimore today with Marie. Thank you, Marie, for calling in.
And thank you for taking my call again. And this time I want to read 6 reasons to worry about Trump care. I have no solution for, you know, what he's going to be doing. And I don't know whether or not you have already read these over the air. Have you heard about the 6 reasons to worry about Trump care?
Oh, there have been many, many articles with any number of reasons to worry about Trump care. But is it short enough?
Well, I'm going to make it short.
Okay.
Because
let's share this version of the 6 reasons that we should be wary of Trump care.
I think we should be concerned because one of the things is Meals on Wheels, which
yes.
I've had to have for myself. Like I told some other people, the food is not soul food, but it helped me to get back to work. And it would help other people to survive. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And to cut or diminish Meals on Wheels, I think is genocide. I'll put it that way.
All right. So we have Meals on Wheels, the threats being to severe cuts to the Meals on Wheels program. What's
yes.
number 2?
Well, according to this article, the bill punishes those with lower wages by eliminating subsidies to help pay for insurance coverage based on a person's income. Second, the bill places a cap on Medicaid spending, which limits the amount states can pay per person. Losing coverage today could mean overdosing, and dying tomorrow. Third, the bill replaces an individual mandate with one effectively requiring continuous coverage. Fourth, it strips important community resources such as Planned Parenthood of federal funding. Fifth, the proposal eliminates the requirement that health plans provide essential health benefits. Finally, the bill cuts the Prevention and Public Health Fund, which constitutes nearly 1/7 of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention budget. And I see with this bill that more elderly people would die. I'm in that category. I'm older than you. And I'm trying to stay alive because there's nobody else here to keep me alive but me.
Well, a couple of things. When you read this article, what were your thoughts?
I was quite upset. I have to tell you that. And, you know, I'm, I don't know what to do at this time.
I know. Well, this is exactly, this is a deliberate and intended impact of this budget. The budget, as you know, is a preliminary budget. It doesn't mean all the things that you just read will happen. It is that this is what Trump is putting forward, as with all budgets. All kinds of things are included with the idea that, you know, when it comes to negotiation time with the Democrats, for example, and with other committees that are looking at particular things that they would in turn object to, you will expect objections coming from interest groups such as Planned Parenthood, such as the ACLU and others. You will find that there's a lot of stuff in the preliminary budget that will disappear or will be negotiated to better please the various constituencies that are objecting. So, but in any event, you can't say, I don't think you could say that any of this is surprising.
No, that's correct.
Well, that's the first thing. And I say that so that you can calm yourself down a bit. We know we could have seen, and we did see what was coming down the pike because we analyzed Donald Trump and we analyzed the attitude of his administration, what it is likely, where it is likely to go with a budget, with policies and so forth. And we were quite on spot, I would say. We did not veer too far off. We kind of hit the mark in analyzing that. So nothing in the budget really should surprise us as such. It would have been a surprise if those programs that you just referred to were actually funded at a higher level, increased funding for these programs. Now, that would have been a pleasant surprise. So nothing in the budget that you have read that causes you a great deal of concern and even, I would even say, on the way to panic, none of that is surprising. The thing that we have to do, and this is a perfect, I'm so glad you are the first caller today.
Thank
because
you.
You illustrate the point we've been talking about. The government is going to do whatever it wants to do. It's a renegade government. It's a rogue government.
Yes.
And it's just slash and burn. That's the way it's operating. And it is a reflection also of his psychological and emotional mindset. But here's the thing. How are we fighting this?
I don't know. Are people go to church and pray? You know.
Yeah, I mean, we could go to church and pray, but this is where the fight comes in.
Yes.
And when we look around, what are we fighting with? And that's what we have to concentrate on getting an answer to. What are we fighting with?
Do we write letters to the president? Do we telephone and make calls to the president?
The answer is we don't know what to do. And that's a collective situation. We don't know what to do. Because the systems that normally would be counted on or could be counted on at a time like this to take on the fight, because that's why you elect people, right?
Yes.
We elect our leaders and we elect an opposition, and we would have expected by now to see a vigorous response or the potential of a vigorous response, but we're not seeing anything.
No.
Because they're not ready.
And then our president, I don't know whether you know this or not, I read in the newspaper, he's taking some type of letter, it starts with letter P, like in Peter, for his hairline, which causes
yes.
some problems.
Yes, yes, it's a drug. Oh, I forgot the name of it, but it's a drug that also affects the prostate. So I don't know how else we can do this thing except issue a major call mm-hmm. that, you know, the people have to issue a call. We have to find some way to galvanize whatever strength we can muster because we have to fight. We just have
yeah.
to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, the people need meals on wheels, and they are still able to go to work after they are given the food. And if they make it so you can't get the food, then you might die. See, I'm very concerned.
But, you know, I don't want you to be so hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
Don't despair
mm-hmm.
at all. Because that's part of the victory
yeah.
for Trump, you know, to have everybody gripped by fear and totally destabilized and totally out of whack,
mm-hmm.
Toying with your minds and doing all kinds of things to manipulate you.
Yes, well,
but you mentioned you know, a praying person. You pray, but the main thing is to keep yourself stable.
Yes.
Don't get overwrought.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get overwrought. Mm-hmm. You will find a way because you're strong enough. you'll find a way. If push comes to shove, you'll find a way to pull through.
Yes.
And you know, should have that abiding faith that even if it's a rough outlook, you have a positive attitude that you're made of stuff that you can find a way. The thing that we're hoping is that we can find a way together.
Oh,
and that,
yes.
That our leadership understands the responsibility it has to defend the people, to defend their rights. And hopefully it could happen sooner than later. And
mm-hmm.
that's the best we can hope for in the circumstances, outside of putting together the best way you can some kind of plan, an emergency plan for yourself for how to survive.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a church-going person. I just put that out there because there's many.
Well, you did mention prayer.
Yeah,
and it's a very useful thing. It could calm you down.
I more or less of a fighter. And I think I've been like that all my life.
Good for you.
And I'm not going to stop now. But listen, thank you for taking out time to talk with you, and you have a good day.
It's a
and
pleasure.
I like your show.
And I'm so glad that you started us off today.
Thank you, and I loved your show yesterday. I didn't want you to stop talking. But anyway, take care of yourself, dear. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank
sure.
you. Goodbye, Marie.
Bye-bye.
From nearby Baltimore, we have Clara from Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm in Philly.
Yes.
Hi. I want to thank you. Before I start, I'm telling you, I've been listening. I always listen. I want to thank you for all that you do for us. I mean, stimulating our thinking and giving us so much information and also encouragement. I hear you really trying hard to get people involved in actually taking care of ourselves. That's what I read into what you're saying. How do
yes.
we take care of ourselves? I think I want to say this to the previous caller, that when we lose sight of how much power we have to care for ourselves, potentially, that's where we become depressed. What we can do, I'm telling you what I've done, spiritually and mentally. I've detach myself from the system in terms of what they're doing. I see this as a program and a process that has to play itself out. I don't think that we have anything to gain from them anymore. We can only gain from what comes from within and from our own communities. As you might recall, I started a long time ago with this idea of caring for myself, but it takes a while. You know, I don't depend on the medical system, except I can't do my own knee. I'm going to have that done. But, I mean, in terms of ongoing care of the body and soul. And the person who called, I don't remember her name. What was her name? Anyway, I wanted to say to her, one thing you can do to feed yourself, you can grow some vegetables in your house. At least you have that. On your porch, in your yard. You can just go buy the plants. You don't have to start with seeds. And I want to say that I'm reading a book now that my son sent me. Are you still there? I don't know if I'm talking to myself or to anyone else.
I'm listening and paying rapt attention.
Okay. Eutrice, my son just sent me a book. He said, Mom, I'm sending you this book. This is about us. I've never heard of it. It's called Black Indians. And it tells a story of how the Indians and the black people related to each other from the 18th century and how we helped each other and how every step of the way the system stepped in to sabotage it. They went to extremes and finally broke this final Seminoles, who were extreme warriors. They were the best warriors this country had ever seen, because they did use them to fight in Mexico. I'm saying this to say that there's no way, I think, of negotiating with these people. They always break. They never keep their word. This is historical. That's number one. There's this book I got in 91, and I went back to read, called Generations. It talks about the evolving series of events through the years. Like every 80 years, a cycle repeats. Mm-hmm. It talks about the interrelationships between the generational cohorts. Like, for instance, my cohort, the Silent Generation, is said to relate very well to millennials. In my personal life, I find that to be true with my grandchildren. It's because we have certain key values that resemble each other. But back to the book, we are now starting the series again. That started in the 30s. Donald Trump talking about his love, his admiration for Andrew Jackson tells us a lot. A lot.
I said that yesterday. You know, it's an amazing thing. It's right out in the open now. Nobody's right. Being, you know, apologetic or hiding this level of racism. It's in your face now.
Andrew Jackson
is his hero.
Yes. He was brutal toward the Indians and the blacks. He was brutal.
Of course. Yes.
He's telling us something. People need to listen. If we don't go to the streets, we better retreat. That's all. We should be in the streets now, not paying attention to Obamacare or Trump care. We should be down there demanding single payer. This is the time.
Exactly.
But I think
we have to go through this process too. Regalvanizing people. Because it's clear that they fell off, but to re-galvanize the effort, re-energize the effort, and to re-inspire people that, you know, the fight isn't over. It's just beginning. And you have to be in it. One way or the other, you're going to have to be in it, whether proactively or reactively, but you're going to be in it. Mm-hmm. So you might as well at least put yourself ahead of it. And get involved. Thank you so much for your call today. Good to hear from you, Clara. Let's go to Reggie from New York.
Oh, hello, Eutrice.
Hi, how you doing?
For you, my Friday.
It's for you, my Friday.
Now my mind is like really messed up in the sense where Alton Maddox's wife is no longer with us, and I just could not go through this day without.
Oh no! Did she pass away?
Yes, she did. That was late Thursday night.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
And there's no words that I can, speak, but I just wanted to call her name, Sister Lita Maddox. And I see her a picture of Coretta Scott King, and I see Billy Shabazz, and I see Leola in the middle, because she's a great man in her life, and she was there.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I am so sorry to hear that.
Yes, ma'am. Well, that's all I wanted to say and stuff. Okay.
This was an extraordinary woman, married, of course, to an extraordinary man, but
exactly.
Extraordinary in her own right, a real, real, real soldier.
That's right.
And a tower of strength, a tower of strength.
That's correct.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And I want to say one last thing. On Wednesday night, we have Dr. Patricia Newton coming to speak, and it seems like to me is the appropriate person to be there for that night when Leola won't be there. This one.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry to hear this.
All right.
But thanks for calling and informing us about that. Thank you so much, Reggie.
All right, bye-bye.
And condolences to you. We should console each other because, we lost a soldier that we both knew quite well. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hello, Henry. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's very sad news. I mean, I didn't know Alton Maddox's wife, but I'm pretty sure her being married to him, she was a soldier as well, because I'm pretty sure the wives of these these true soldiers in our community, they are not going to be soldiers unless they're married to these people. So my condolences to the Maddox family and to everybody who looks up to Alton Maddox and his wife. It's very sad news. I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Early in the week you were talking about, what are we doing in regards to preparing for what's coming in the Trump administration. Here in Chicago, we've been putting up pockets of resistance in regards to trying to take control of our own communities. Last week, I participated in a shutdown of a corner liquor store that was basically selling bad food and from some people in the community running drugs and guns out of it. We shut down the store for about a good couple of hours till the owner came, and basically we talked to him about these issues that the community's having. So he said he was going to address it, so we're going to follow back with him next week about what's going on there. But there have been other pockets of resistance as well. A while ago, there was a shutdown of a gas station due to the owner, who basically kind of called one of the young sisters in that community the B word. And so an organization came by and basically shut down the gas station. And the gas station basically lost a lot of money. Also, too, a Metro PCS was shut down as well. And what was so interesting about that was there was an Arab owner who was owning it. And after they shut it down the next day, they had a black manager there. So there's been pockets of resistance that's been going around Chicago in regards to trying to make these businesses accountable for the people of the community at first. Because I don't know if you saw the video of the Korean man who choked the young the young girl. Well, apparently the owner has franchises across the country. And there's one here in Chicago, which we are planning on going over to protest and shut down here in Chicago on Saturday. So we're going to take care of that. And also, too, Jason Van Dyke, the officer who shot Laquan McDonald 3 years ago, he is currently out on bail, and he's having another court hearing next Thursday on March 23rd at the county building on 26th and California. So for all your listeners in Chicago, we are planning to be there to see if justice is being served, because right now he has that court date at 9 a.m. It's in courtroom 1728. We are planning, me and a bunch of organizations are going to be there to see if we can get justice out of this, because the last time we've heard of this case, his attorneys filed an appeal to have the murder charges dropped. So we're going to see if this ruling comes through or if a trial is going to happen. I know there was an elder who follows this case, and he says that the first couple of times he had hearings, Jason Van Dyke, there was nobody there to, support the family of the victims. And basically he said that that was an issue because of the fact that the community should be out there making sure that justice is being served, because, he said that, most of the times these cases get thrown out because there's nobody there to, for outrage, for crimes that, the police do against, black and brown people. So he put in the word out to these different organizations that we should be there. So because these court dates aren't like, they're public, but they're kind of hard to find. So I'm putting the word out there for all your Chicago listeners that, we're going to be out there 9 o'clock. And it's at, the courthouse is on 26th and California. For those who live in Chicago, know where that's at. So, but that, that's basically what I wanted to report in regards to the pockets of resistance. Because the first thing we have to do before we can even handle stuff on a national level is handle it on a community level. Because the problem is that we have to get a handle of our own communities.
And, amen.
With the health care, I was listening to your first caller, the elder, who was talking about, the problems with the up-and-coming bill. We have to take responsibility for that. People my age and younger have to take responsibility for that because, obviously if we had our own hospitals, we wouldn't even have to worry about what health care plan is coming, And if we took care of our elders and our children the way we should be, the elder that was talking to you earlier, she wouldn't have to worry about that. So
that's Marie from Baltimore, I think, is who you're referring to.
Yes, and she wouldn't have to worry about it if, we were taking care of business. So we have to start somewhere, and this is where we're going to try to start, at least trying to take over the economics and trying to make the businesses in our neighborhoods accountable for at least giving, their customers some kind of level of respect.
Well, I think it's a great idea when people, on the basis of just that, self-respect, take action. Of course, if all things were ideal, you would have your own businesses flourishing. Mm-hmm. But it is a good thing to see that there is reaction to a bad situation. Any bad situation, any situation deemed intolerable should be resisted. And that's an excellent example of how communities should be operating as a unit to communicate a message, because other communities don't have to be tutored. they don't have to be tutored on how to behave in other communities.
Mm-hmm.
But it is almost across the board that the thinking is in Black and Latino communities, in poor communities, you could do anything you want. There are no rules. There are no laws. There's no punishment for behaving badly. But it's as good when people decide that, enough is enough, and we have to do something about it. So I congratulate you. Let us hear from you about how it went or how it's going to be going.
Yeah, and then one last thing, too. When they were shutting down these businesses, we gave them alternatives to Black-owned businesses that they can go to. Obviously, it was a little further than what they were used to, but we don't just shut these businesses down. We give them alternatives, even like with the situation with the gas station. There was a Black-owned gas station like about 3 or 4 blocks down. So it's like we're not just purposely shutting down businesses. We're actually directing them to businesses that are owned by us.
Excellent. Excellent. That is excellent work.
So we're
keep us informed, Henry.
Yes. Okay. I will.
Thank you so much.
All right,
Harvey,
thanks.
From Berkeley, you're on the air. Is Harvey there? Okay. Julie from New York.
Hi, you're
Teresa.
It's Harvey. It's Harvey on the air.
Oh, Harvey.
How are you?
I thought you were missing in action there for a while.
That's right. Well, here I am. I have an uplifting message today. One of the major forms of poverty in America and the world is a lack of a good education, especially on a college and university level. And for people who can't afford to attend a campus-based education, which is very expensive, there's a new off-the-shelf technology called virtual reality that might be the answer. Virtual reality headsets, which are primarily used for entertainment purposes right now, like video games and movies, but there would be a virtual reality cameras located in front of the lecture hall or classroom that transmits the lecture to you live in real time. And just before the lecture begins, you place the virtual reality unit on your head, which will enable you to be in the lecture hall during the lecture. A microphone attached to your virtual reality headset will allow you to interact with the professor in the lecture hall, and the lectures can be recorded or archived for later repeated use. Imagine having a front row seat at a university or college lecture of your choice while sitting in your kitchen, say in a low-income neighborhood of Chicago. And this virtual reality technology has the ability to provide a well-rounded, low-cost education to people throughout America and the world, and I believe it would help us alleviate a lot of the poverty that we experience today through this virtual reality technology.
But you have to buy things, right? You have to buy the headset, and what
yes.
else do you have
well,
to pay
it would
for?
Be, you'd be like hooked up through the internet. And yeah. But most people are already. They have a computer or cheap internet. This could be subsidized. You can the government could or different groups could pay for these headsets, which are becoming very, very. They're becoming low cost now. And imagine you can attend one lecture. Say you want a certain lectures in physics. Well, maybe you have a physics professor that you like his lectures, and he's at Stanford, and another lecturer is at the UC California. You can go. You can essentially. You don't have to go to one college for all your lectures. You can go to one lecture here, one lecture there, and in the end, you could take exams and pass and become educated in any number of fields. And so, because now you know, like I'm in Berkeley here, and to go to UC campus. You have to pay. There's an incredible fee. People often take on debt, which by the time they get out of college, they're thousands, thousands of dollars into debt. The cost of living, housing, food, transportation, et cetera, et cetera. It's all very expensive, and it limits a lot of the people. And you don't know. You may have a genius that is actually living in a ghetto who's born to poor parents and can't afford it. He or she ends up flipping hamburgers where they could be a math genius and maybe they could find a cure for cancer or something, but because they're in an economic poverty situation, they can't get it. Well, now, with virtual reality, they could be sitting in their kitchen, put on the headset, and attend lectures in medicine, the finest lectures in the world, and interact with the professor live through our electronic technology and become and bloom and go on to become doctors, lawyers, physicists, whatever, space program, And it wouldn't really matter as to your economic position. I think that's what this new technology offers, virtual reality.
Is there some kind of fee, an ongoing fee for these lectures?
Well, this could be, but it could be on a scholarship program. And it could be so low cost because you're basically, you're just staying in your house. You're not acquiring any expenses that you wouldn't have normally. And instead of, say, entertaining yourself, you could be attending lectures. It could be a new form of education through this technology and could benefit us, all America and the world. And I think that it could, actually, because the most precious things are our minds. And if our minds are allowed to bloom, who knows, we can get way past the Trump stuff in a minute. So, but it's all based on our economic status at the time. This technology could help us bypass that problem at very little cost compared to the normal cost of a college or a university education.
Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And good to hear from you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. We go next to John. John, you're on the air. John from New York.
Appreciate your work, and I'm glad to see you healthy and running around. It was real rooting for you.
Thank you.
I wanted to respond to the guy who was doing the what looked like a kind of mob rule. And I just wanted to say that it's a little dangerous, vigilante mob rule.
Now,
let's
deal with some of the words that you've used already. Mob rule, vigilante. How did you get that?
Well, he said that, he took a bunch of people and they sat outside the store and blocked traffic for 2 hours. And, in the nation of laws, we have
the right to...
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, you're fading in and out. Okay, what I heard was a person who he talked also about a dialogue, and all of this occurring as a result of violence and other derogatory action being taken by proprietors in a predominantly African-American community, including, as he raised an example, of an Asian proprietor, and there were pictures of it and tape of it, literally choking a customer. I don't know anywhere in the world where it is acceptable for a proprietor to attack a customer. I just don't know that. But what I heard from Henry was that the community's outrage was being directed in a very, very positive way.
I
don't understand how, in your mind, that constitutes vigilantism and mob rule.
No, I'm not stating that in those specific instances of the video, et cetera, that it's mob rule. What I'm concerned about is that, we have a constitution. There's a Sixth Amendment right to challenge the witnesses, and I think that citizens should consider operating as a citizen's grand jury under the Tenth Amendment, so that way they can make laws for their own neighborhood that will stand up in a court of law. And, people are free to do whatever they want. I just feel that, everybody should get a fair shake. And if, somebody's accused just because somebody said something, or if there's, actual evidence like a video, those are two different things. And, I just want to make sure that we could stand on our founders' constitution. Thank you.
But I want to engage you a little longer on this point, because that is exactly the rationale given and historically has been given for white supremacist organizations. It's the premise under which the Klan operated, Citizens Council operated, and other terror groups under the guise that they were merely being covered by, the Constitution. The Constitution is twisted, just like the Bible. You know, people quote all kinds of phrases and paragraphs from the Bible to justify and explain some horrific things that they say and do. But what this is, do you see this as he related it? Do you see this as a kind of mob rule? Or that they were practicing a kind of mob vigilantism?
It appeared that it was on the cusp of it, and I was concerned that, you know, the way he was referring to it, that it could escalate where, you know, you have 2,000 people show up at somebody's doorstep because somebody said something, you know, with no evidence, no basis or anything.
But he did, and he did say that they engaged directly with the proprietors. He did say that there was a group that came together and expressed some concerns about the conduct of the business.
And
I think that they have a right to do that.
There was no implication
from what we heard. There was no implication that this was going to be violence involved. We got the implication that they were affirming and protecting a standard of conduct in their neighborhood.
And every neighborhood should have the right to. I'm not condoning, I'm not against people, you know, standing up for what they believe in. I'm just saying that, you know, it can be a slippery slope when you rally hundreds of people to come down for an action, or thousands of people to come down for an action, and, you know, how do you know that it's, you know, actually has evidence behind it? I mean, in terms of the video, of course it had evidence behind it. I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying that if we're going to be a nation of laws, we should remember that everybody should have a chance to review the evidence. Look at what Fidel Castro did. He had Truth Tribunals where he put the accused in a stadium and televised it.
He had what?
Those truth tribunals when they did the revolution in Cuba. And they televised a lot of the trials.
Well, you know, I'm saying we should confine ourselves to what we heard, the report that we got. And the report that we got simply was relaying that there was an effort in the community to organize itself and to impress all the people in the community that there ought to be some order, some way of understanding that there is a standard of behavior, even if people didn't recognize it, but that they were operating on that notion that there should be and that there is going to be a standard of conduct.
And that's great. Well, I wish more neighborhoods would do the same thing. Just, you know, we don't want to...
Well, yes, but I'm troubled because you're veering into an area using this particular report, and then you're attaching it to things that I don't think belong in the discussion. I don't see how it belongs in the discussion of going down a slippery slope and, you know, encouraging or possibly encouraging mass action and mass disorder. I got the exact opposite view from what he said.
The guy sounds, you know, like a really legitimate guy. He has a legitimate gripe, and I think he's kept it really cool and everything, and I think it's great for the neighborhood to get together. I just think that, you know, we have established a system, and I think that when you just try to throw a bunch of people to show up, you know, everybody should have a chance, you know, to see what the evidence is, you know. And I was just talking in general. I wasn't talking specifically
right
about what he did bad or not. I was just worried that everybody gets a chance to confront their witnesses, and sometimes.
Well, here's the thing. A good thing has just happened. We have Henry on the line, and maybe it would be great to listen to a dialogue between you and Henry, and we will get to understand, and things would be a little bit clearer. Henry, you're back on the air with us, I understand?
Yes.
Okay,
just to
Henry,
let you know,
meet John.
Hi,
this
how you
is
doing,
John from New York.
Hi. Just to let you know, nobody was arrested. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was injured. We did have dialogue with the owner of the store. There was dialogue with the owner of the gas station. Now, in regards to the evidence, these are people from the community who live around the neighborhood who have told us that they were selling rotten food, which we actually got in, and we saw that there was some food that was expired on their shelves. But we also had multiple people, multiple witnesses. Now, we can't confirm this by video or whatever, but, you know, running drugs and running guns out of that store. In the case of the gas station, there were multiple witnesses.
Just 1 second. I mean, I don't want to go over the, you know, those specific details. I'm sure you have legitimate gripes. I'm not taking anything away. You know, what you guys did was, you know, entirely appropriate from your perspective. I was just talking really in a larger picture type of thing, and I have nothing against you or what your group did. I was just concerned that, you know, if your idea winds up with 50,000 people against a small shop owner because, you know, somebody said boo, you know, I just was concerned about us making sure that everybody has a fair chance to, you know, confront the gripes against them.
And I understand that, but these are not, you know, this is not situations where somebody said boo. This is running guns out of a store, disrespecting customers. I mean, literally disrespecting customers. I mean, calling them out of their names, and it's not going to be tolerated within our communities.
I wouldn't tolerate that either, Henry. You and I are on the same page, for sure.
Well, I'm glad we're all on the same page. And again, I think it is a great thing that you're doing in bringing awareness to the entire community that it is time to insist on a standard of conduct in your neighborhood by everybody.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it's a good thing. So, John, are we clearer?
Yes, much clearer. Thank you very much, Patrice. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you so much. And
right,
I'm clearer, too. Thank you. And thank you, Henry, for calling
thank
back.
Thank you.
All right. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Patrice. How are you doing?
Hello. How are you? Haven't heard from you for a while.
Well, when I can, I listen. Sometimes I don't call. I'd rather just listen to you and the callers. And, you know, you learn. It's good to be a good listener sometimes.
What have you for us today?
Okay. The first thing, I do have to say something to that gentleman, John. First of all, I hope that John is real because, first of all, that's John sounded like when somebody goes into the TV station and they don't want their face to be shown and you hear that muffled, that little sound that you can't recognize the voice of that person. And that's how he sounded to me. I hope that he is real. But one of the things that he bothered me about his call is he talks about that he wants fairness. When this country has been fair to people of color and the laws, what laws? A country of laws? The laws have been set up just against us to have the maximum of us in jail, in prison. So I'm a little bit confused of what he was saying. Fairness? Fairness. As a Native American, this country, this nation have been fair to them. As African American, as the Latino. And you could go on and on. Now the Muslim. So it's just very disturbing to me. And I just wanted to say that I go to a group on Sundays, is part of Occupy Wall Street. And one gentleman who had been disagreeing with almost the entire group is an African-American man who doesn't believe on UBI, Universal Basic Income. He's the only person. So every time that I hear somebody of color always defending the system, it's just to me, I don't know what to say. It's mind-boggling that sometimes that happens. But I do wanted to say two more things. One, that you're talking about how we are going to fight this system and what is going on. Sometimes you have to fight the system locally. And I think it's been Henry, I think it's who has said that a few times. I could be mistaken, but I think. And
no, that's
one of the
Henry things, has said that, yes.
Yes. And one of the things that, one of the group that I belong to that we meet every Friday, we do in a citywide housing conference. And I wanted to let everyone know that lives in New York to come and support this. It's a citywide housing conference. It's going to be in the Bronx on April 1st from 10 to 6 a.m. I'm one of the organizers. We're going to have speakers. We're going to have a gentleman by the name of John Fisher, Nellie Belly. I don't know if you're familiar with Nellie Belly.
Sure, she's on the station.
Yes, and also a gentleman by the name of Rob Hollander. So that's going to be the three main speakers. We also, in the afternoon, going to have workshop. And this is going to be April 1st from 10 to 6 p.m. at the Metropolitan College of New York, and it's located on 463 East 149th Street. And you could take the 2 and the 5, that's the train, and get off on 3rd Avenue and 149. You can't miss it. And this is going to be April 1st.
What's the point of the conference?
The point of the conference, we're going to be talking about 421A, which is the money that these big developers are getting to build these humongous condominiums, I mean buildings. The government giving them money, welfare money. I mean, you're talking about people getting, well, you know, money from the government. I mean, these developers, in order for them to develop this building, they have to get money from the government. We're also going to talk about what you call here now MIH, ZQA, Mandatory Inclusionary Housing, which is they said it's inclusionary, but it's exclusionary because taking people out of the neighborhood. And we're also going to be talking about the NYCHA, which is the New York City Housing Authority. Also, we're going to cover the Mishulama, which is, you know, the program for middle-income people that is offered here in the city. And also, we're going to cover a big ground on homeless people. Some of the people in the group that we meet on Friday, that we hold our meetings on Friday, a lot of the people, they have been homeless, and some people, they're still living in shelters. So this is why I'm fighting what is going on, because you have to, some of the things affect you more locally than things that are happening in Washington. And right now we have the so-called, in this city, progressive mayor who is actually gentrifying the city faster than ever. And so these are the kind of things that people have to do. You just have to join organizations that you think will serve you. But also remember one thing. There are organizations that they don't want to work with other organizations. And this is one of the things that we're fighting in this city.
This is true. And that's a historic problem about having differences of opinion about the approach to solving a problem or who should lead, you know, that kind of thing. It gets in the way. And before you know it, a really wonderful opportunity to galvanize power gets frittered away. Thanks so much, Ali, for calling today. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of the program. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Jack Rasmus. Always something to learn from Dr. Jack. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the program. And As always, this is the weekend. Surround yourselves with positive people who bring positive dimension to your life. And do your best to avoid the other kind. All right. A pleasure always and a great privilege for me, and I mean that, to be in your company. See you on Monday. Bye-bye.